Welcome back to the programme. Good to have you with us. Why do people constantly complain about the state of our roads, says a listener. And yet yesterday, everyone I met in Inishowen was complaining about the delays caused by improvement road work. Show a little patience, people. There is a bit of a juxtaposition there. Staying with the roads, just been contacted by Edward to say that the road between Ballyhooly and Galdonna is now clear. So if you intended to go into that region or that area to visit a shop or a person or what have you, that road is now clear. Caroline, is that mine there just on the corner? That's my fault. My apologies. Greg, congratulations to Catherine Connolly as our new president. I was disappointed to hear Thomas Pringle dismiss the spoiled votes with the comment, "We can't pander to the right-wing people." I used to be a supporter of Thomas, but think he was out of touch on this one. We had a chat with Airgrid just before the news there. They're talking about, as we get older, how do we make our houses warmer? But we are more worried about having the money to feed the families. The government would rather spend $50 billion in fines than money for retrofitting. That's a really interesting point you make, you know, because there's one thing dismissing climate out of hand or what we could do. But you're so right there. Because we won't reach our targets, we are likely to be throwing away billions of euro in fines to the EU. And that money actually could be spent to make it more affordable to retrofit homes. So I think that's a really sound point you've made there. Thanks for that. More climate crisis nonsense. We should be using our own natural resources to produce our own energy. There are few things that pollute the planet more than electric vehicles. It's not all about electric vehicles, though. I've gone into someone's new house there recently in the triple glazing, in underfloor insulation in the walls, insulation in the roof, not a draft or kind, and they barely even had to put their heating on to keep the house warm. It's different from a new build, right? So that's beneficial. The house is warm all the time. It is warm all the time. And they have their heating on far, 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 far less than we have. That makes sense. That is good for the environment. But that's when you're doing a new build. How can the rest of us get there? And, you know, look, in terms of the climate crisis, I mean, look around. You know, the climate is changing. Now, there's no doubt about that. Maybe you'd think it's not to do with burning stuff. But I'm thinking on Hudson, and I'm thinking on Lee and Aaron, and I'm thinking on their kids. And, you know, I don't want to be too selfish on this. I mean, it does seem to be what we are doing is changing the climate very quickly. The climate always changes. But since industrialization, there's been a dramatic change, and we are seeing different types of weather. So I respectfully disagree with you in relation to that. I think we do have to look forward and sort of say, well, what can we do that's a benefit to us, but also, you know, is more respectful of, if you're religious, what God gave us. Turbines on peat bogs are not green anything. The Finns are using sand batteries, not dangerous lithium batteries, but the electricity companies don't profit that way, says a listener. On the issue of religion, seriously, Greg, what will be next? Universities have a stated duty to protect the mental health and well-being of their students. This is where I think we're too protective of young people, and tough living to make you stronger is fast disappearing. The Bible should be treated no differently than other classics that also contain themes of violence and rape. Is every English class who reads Shakespeare given these warnings? I don't think so. I don't think so, to be honest with you. And I do think we are doing everything we can and we should to protect the mental health of our children and our young people. But I question whether we're doing it correctly. You know, we've hours and hours of well-being classes. We've never had more supports than we've ever had. Yet we've high rates of mental health issues, depression, anxiety in our children. And then, you know, are we forgoing our duty to prep them for the big bad world? So there has to be something to do that helps people, but also doesn't damage them, I think is the easiest way I can put it. In relation to organ donation, it's about having control over my body. That's why I opted out. This government has far too much control over our lives. But as I say, and I respect your point of view, but if you've ever been in that position where you're with someone who is alive but no longer alive, and someone approaches you and says, look, what's the situation with organ donation? They're medical professionals. That is not Simon Harris, Dara O'Brien, Micheál Martin. You know, that is the people who are charged with keeping you alive, and if they can't, keeping someone else alive. I don't see it as the government having any control over my body, but as I say, I'm open to correction. My mind's open on this. A caller says, having been through HSE practices over the years, I do not trust them not to harvest organs. All the scandals, cervical smear, deaths, breast check deaths, children with shop-bought screws inserted into them, and children getting unnecessary hip surgery. You're naive, Greg, if you implicitly trust the health system in Ireland. As a whole, I mean, obviously, you know, you've highlighted a number of issues within the health service. I have contact with lots of people working in it. And I'll be honest with you, I will have absolute trust if, God forbid, I collapse here right now and I'm taken down the road to Letterkenny. I'll have absolute trust, and I don't care where anyone comes from or whatever. And I carry that respect then in my broader life. I will do whatever they say if it means I don't die. Harvesting organs, to what end, though? I understand where you're coming from. Are you about harvesting organs to sell them on, or harvesting organs to give someone else the opportunity of life? Again, I'm not often called naive, but I appreciate your commentary. But let's tease the convo out a little bit more, because I really do want to learn. Right, now, privately on Facebook, if the truth be told. It's someone who's in a bit of a pickle, and they asked me to read this out. It's a relationship situation. They asked me to read this out in case any of you out there have any information. Not information, but advice for them. Now, obviously, there's going to be a knee-jerk reaction to these types of to this type of a contact, right? But let's try and think about it a little bit and think about the realities of living with someone, and if sort of it feels like your life has been turned upside down, and how it can be difficult maybe to cut your losses and leave, or whatever it might be. I'll read it as it was written to me. And then if you wish, you can maybe talk of your experience or pass on some advice to this listener who feels very isolated. I know that myself. And the message reads as follows. I'm writing about a discovery that's completely blindsided me and shattered my trust, and I need urgent perspective and advice. My husband and I have been happily married for 10 years, but this week I saw his app history on the Google Play Store. Clear as day, I found that the app Grindr had been previously downloaded to his account. Now, Grindr is a hookup site, a gay hookup site, really, a dating site, I should say. So I don't know how this lady found access to, but you can see apps that have been previously downloaded. So they had access to the app history on the Google Play Store, and clear as day, I found that the app Grindr had been previously downloaded to his account. The app is deleted now, but the download history confirms it was there. This isn't a vague suspicion. It's a concrete fact pointing to, potentially, a big secret. I'm now paralyzed with fear and shock. Does this mean my husband is gay, bisexual, even potentially living a double life? I've got no idea how long this has been going on or what it means for our marriage. I haven't confronted him yet. How do I even start this conversation, and what information do I need to prepare for? I feel completely lost and betrayed, and don't even know how I might react if it confirms that it is true. Please, have you any advice to me? So this is a person who seemingly everything was going their way. Very happy marriage, very happy relationship, 10 years together. It hasn't referenced, or they don't reference if there's any children involved, whether that matters or not. But they had access to the app history, the download history on the App Store, and they found the app Grindr, which is a gay dating site. They say the app's not on the phone, though it could be in a secret folder, if the truth be told. You can hide apps for your phone. But anyway, they haven't confronted their other half. They don't know what to do. They're paralyzed with fear and shock. They don't know if their husband's gay, bisexual, potentially living a double life, or maybe there's another reason for it. Any advice to our listener? They say they are shattered and blindsided. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000, or if you want, give us a call on 074 91 25,000, and maybe we can help that person out. All right, good luck if you're playing the bingo today and supporting Vision Ireland. Fair play to you. You really are doing a sterling job in having a bit of fun and also being in line to win hundreds of euro every day, thousands of euro on a Thursday. There are people picking up pockets of cash on a regular basis. And you're also supporting Vision Ireland. We are one of the We are, and I mean we as the Highland family, not me, are one of the most significant contributors in this region to Vision Ireland. So fair play. You're winning. You're having fun. It's not a club, by the way. You can get your bingo book whenever you like. They're in most retail stores, and join in the fun there. Now, Farming for Nature has announced its 12 new Farming for Nature ambassadors for 25. These exemplary farmers are showing what's possible when we work with nature instead of against it. They're leading the way in recognising the role of nature in supporting a healthy and thriving farm today and for the future. Seanáin O'Buil is a nature-friendly Irish farmer leading the way in sustainable sheep farming, and he is one of those 12, the 12 disciples, Farming for Nature ambassadors. Good morning, Seanáin. Thank you so much for calling in to us.
Good morning.
And yeah. I suppose, really, to be fair to the wider farming community, I don't think, and it kind of has been framed by the way this has been written out here, I don't think farmers are actively working against nature, are they?
Oh, definitely not. I suppose there's sometimes there's bad press, I suppose, comes out about farming and what's going on. But in general, like, farmers have to work with what they've got, the landscape that they're farming. And in a lot of cases, in the majority of cases, you know, we have to treat that the right way, or else we won't be farming, I suppose, going forward in the next generation.
Yeah. Now, based in Fulcarra, you have a sheep and cattle farm spanning 80 hectares. So how do you farm differently? How are you more sort of working with nature in how you farm?
I suppose in the last maybe 10 to 15 years, especially with the Burn project coming on stream down there, there was funding was coming from Europe, and it was to do with environmental, I suppose, goals that was on certain types of land. And in the case of that, I suppose my land fell into that. We've had our land, majority of my land, maybe 70-80% of my land would be designated land, either SAC, which is Special Areas of Conservation, or SPAs, which is Special Protection Areas. Now, that would span basically from the top of Muckish Mountain right down to the shoreline. The SPAs along the shoreline for the Corn Creek Board. So basically what I had to do when that scheme came out back 5-6 years ago was to start farming in a different way. And the real thing about, I suppose, the Corn Creek in general and its habitat, and we had to kind of work with instead of going the system that we had before that of, intensive farming and cutting maybe two crops of silage, and that we had to reduce that and allow the bird a space for him to thrive as well.
Does that mean that you would be able to farm fewer animals, or you are able to farm have the same amount of animals but just do it in a different way?
Well, in the case of the Corn Creek project, they wanted the land closed off for a period from March to August to allow any of the birds that would come to, that they would give them the best chance possible. So that in that case, you have to reduce your stock numbers and that there, but then you're being compensated for that by taking part in the scheme. So there's a kind of, it works both ways.
Do you think we're right in doing that? I mean, the Corn Creek obviously is a little bird. It's treated very differently in North Africa than it is here. Is the disruption that you've embraced worth it for the protection of this little bird?
Oh, it has worked in my case, and I'm happy to be part of it. And it was a successful scheme, I suppose. The birds originally back maybe 5 years ago nationally was about 180 pairs. It's gone up to now nearly 290 pairs. Mm. And, you know, that hopefully that job of work will continue under a new programme.
And have you found yourself, you know, obviously you saw schemes get out, come out there and you saw, you know, what was wanted of you and all that kind of stuff. Have you always had a particular interest in nature, or has it grown through this process?
No, I suppose my own story, if you go back to the original, when I took over the farm as a 20-year-old back in 1991, you know, there was about 130 ewes on the mountain. Cattle were walked up to the mountain every day. You know, that was the system that was there. I took it over, big ideas. I wanted to go, like, suppose maybe the people on the good land out, maybe this part of the country or further out. And I started to invest and put whatever money that I was earning into getting bigger and going down the line of different stock types, the whole lot. And as it's happened, I suppose in the last 10 years, I've kind of come full circle. I'm back up on the hill again with a flock of 150 ewes. I've gone down the road of rather than the continental cattle, where I suppose my land type was heavy and they were damaging it in wet periods, and there's more of that happening. I've gone down the road of black Galloway cattle, to they're easier on the ground and they don't need the same, I suppose, quality of grass either.
And what's the market for them?
The market for, as regards the females, would be very good because there's a demand there for that type of cattle to be used in a sense on conservation grazing, I suppose, which is one of the most obvious. I done that out in Torrey Island, what the Corn Creek project, where they went out there and they grazed the land out there that had gone into rank vegetation, and likewise along the coastline and Falkirra. So as regards the females, as I say, the males, you don't get a premium price for the males. They're way behind what you would class as the continental, but you just have to balance out what inputs as well. And that was the decision I took, I suppose, back maybe 10 years ago, that I was putting a lot into the farm and maybe not getting the return at the end of it. And this system now that I've developed is getting a balance, and it's doing a bit for nature as well.
In terms of inputs, what are you avoiding using? I mean, I know there's various inputs right across the scheme, but in terms of, you know, nature, what way have you adjusted that would be more friendly to nature?
Well, the two big ones is feed and fertiliser. Mm. That's basically the nuts and bolts of
farming. And how do you get the results that are required to maintain your business without using fertiliser?
Well, I suppose it's basically as well the fact that these EIPs, these European Innovation Partnership, these programmes that come in and schemes that have come in, and I know there has been schemes always there, environmental schemes since the 90s, REPs and right the whole way through to ACRES now, but these were very targeted, and they, I suppose, have, you know, you were getting a better payment because you were doing actions on your land to help to improve the habitat that's there for what's in the case of on the mountains as well. It's a new system now. We're getting scored on the land type up there. So it's up to us as farmers, as opposed to step up to the plate and say, right, what can we do different here to get a better score, better payment?
Do you believe that what you're doing could be done on scale, right? So you've got a particular plot of land and a certain size of a farm, and you can work with that. But I mean, obviously, you know, this is sort of the idea being that there'd be a broad adaptation of this amongst the farming community. Could the farming community as a whole be doing some of the stuff that you are doing, say, for instance, to reduce emissions or damage to land or whatever?
Absolutely. Like, it's happening that some of the ambassadors this year came from Arable, came from dairy, you know, so they're, I suppose, two big farming sectors in the country, and they're leaving areas of their farm space for nature, basically. Now, on our side or in our part of the country, there's a lot of that land type already there. The space for nature is part of our farms. It's just maybe a case of broadening that out and doing works to maybe help and enhance that area.
You're also an early adopter of technology. Talk to me a little bit about some of the technology you employ on the farm.
Yeah, well, that was through, I suppose, the National Parks and Wildlife Service and the collars, the GPS collars on the cattle. That was a trial was done a couple of years ago. So basically what happens is when you put them cattle to an area, and as it happened, they were on Torrey Island at the time, in my own case, I was able to, on the app on the phone, check them on a daily basis where they were in the area, and with the, so from that point of view, it helped me. It didn't mean I didn't need to be there, and that's been used a fair bit on the mountains now in Ireland, and it'll be used even more so going forward. So I suppose the person in charge of that was Barry Donoghue from National Parks and Wildlife, and he was one of the people that put myself forward for the award, along with John Carey from the Corn Creek project.
Sorry, what is virtual fencing?
So basically, if you take a commonage situation, yeah, and commonage is open land, so on your phone you make a line on the phone to say maybe a 40-acre plot or a 60-acre plot, and then the collars, as the cattle are coming towards that line, imaginary line, they get a sound, a noise first of all, and as they get closer then they'll get a jag and they turn back, basically. So that's the virtual fencing system.
And is it effective?
Very effective. And I think it could be a game changer for uplands in the country, and just to manage the uplands, because I know it's a hard thing to do for to put sheep back onto mountains.
Yeah, for sure. There seems to be a chasm between the decision makers, the policy makers, and all that kind of stuff, and the guys and girls actually on the ground struggling to make a living. How do we close that, do you think? Is it through people like yourself?
I believe it is, and I suppose I've been very vocal on this in the last maybe couple of years, in that, as I said earlier, my system and how I started off and the direction I took that direction purely based on policy and the policy at the time and how we were being told to do things. But I think a big part of it is that farmers need to take ownership of this again. A lot of the time a scheme will come into place and we have to follow then, but that scheme hasn't got an imprint from the farmers. And the thing I would see, even I've been a part of setting up the founder member of the Irish Nature and Health Farmers Association, and that was to give a voice to farmers on that land, type of land. But I know from the meetings we've had over the years that farmers in that area would tend not to speak out. They feel that, I suppose, maybe they took over that farm, maybe, and they're a lesser than everybody else that's out there. And I think maybe just something I would like to put out there is that their input's invaluable to this process. Like, and I think we need to take ownership of this again, because there's a lot of ecologists, environmentalists, people on the policy side of things coming along and saying you've got to go down this road. And we know from the past that maybe a lot of the roads that we went down, we ended up going there for 4, 5 or 6 years and then having to take a turn. Now we go a different direction. So I think it's us on the ground that knows our land, knows how to manage our land, and we need to be more vocal about that.
A caller asked a good question. How do you even get on these nature-friendly farming schemes, as they're not everywhere?
No, well, I suppose it depends just where you're located and what type of land you've got in the first place, and is there a habitat there that needs protecting? Is there a bird there that needs protecting? And basically I've been involved in a few of the EIPs myself and helping getting them off the ground. There's a new one is up and running now in Donegal and Mayo called Farm Up, which we're hoping to go at in the commonages to get stuff working there. So it's really down to where you are and what's actually there on the ground that you're farming.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Shaunie, listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. Anything you want to add?
No, just as I said, just the part there, I suppose, I'd like to thank the Corn Creek Project and NPWS and Barry Dunning in particular for putting me forward for it. It's something I've been doing a fair bit of work on this good number of years, and just I'm happy to, I suppose, push on and maybe keep going and keep at it.
Good stuff. Keep at it. Shaunie O'Buell, nature-friendly Irish farmer, leading the way in sustainable sheep farming. Lovely to chat to you. Thanks for calling over.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, DLDC Business Showcase Week is a special event dedicated to recognising and promoting Donegal's newest businesses. All week long, we'll be putting the spotlight on the unique entrepreneurial spirit that thrives right here in our county. The partnership with DLDC, we're thrilled to feature these incredible businesses. Well, I don't know yet. This has been run out for me. This could be an absolute stinker. But anyway, I'm told I'm thrilled to feature these incredible businesses, and we'll be sharing their stories and demonstrating the vital contributions that they're making to our local community. This is why I don't script the show. You can also stay tuned to our socials, where we'll feature promotional videos showcasing the unique services. Now, this is the area I'm more comfortable in. Just speaking, Caroline Crumlish from Ancient Roots Ireland. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Thank you. Good.
It's great to have you in. And we've got Claire Lynch of CL Wellness. Hiya, Claire.
Hello. How's it going?
Doing good. Tell us about your business, Claire, CL Wellness.
So I suppose it is a couple of things. I am a one person to many different people from the ages of 5 right up to 65 plus. So I do fitness classes, Pilates, men's, women, and I do teen classes, which would be kind of a mixture of Pilates and yoga. So I am based in Milford and in Termin JAA Club. So that's where my community classes happen. But I suppose the other side of CL Wellness is my niche, which is children's yoga. So that is, yeah, that's a special little class where I take my inner child that I have inside me and I take it into a room with other kids, and we just have a great time using our imaginations, get creative and go on all sorts of magical adventures.
Oh wow, that sounds
so
lovely.
Yeah, all through yoga.
And is it primarily classes or one-on-one, or is it a mix, or what way?
So it is, It is classes. Now, it can be one-on-ones. Mm. It's something that I haven't quite explored yet. I suppose I'm just new, just starting off. So the way you get out there is by offering out the classes and get your word out there. But yes, absolutely one-on-ones. But for now, it is all through classes.
In the area of wellness and the other practices you teach other people or do with them, mm-hmm. you have a passion for it yourself, right? Yeah. That was rooted in you before you made this into a business. Did you ever doubt that it could be a business, if you know what I mean? Or were those around you that says, look, this is something you care about, right? Mm-hmm. This airy fairy stuff you're on about, kids yoga, what are you on about? That's not a business, right? Yeah. I think it's brilliant, by the way, don't get me wrong. You. But I'm just trying to sort of talk to the supports that maybe even mm-hmm. you got from the DLDC to say, no, actually, you know what? Mm-hmm. I love this, but if you work at what you love, you never work a day in your life, right?
100%. Okay, yeah,
so how did you go from a passion, something you believe in, into actually a business?
I think I had to go on a journey. I spent 16 and a half years in the Mount Argyle Leisure Centre from like where I just started off, you know, as a leisure attendant and worked my way up. So, you know, that started off with doing kids swimming lessons, and that's where it all started. You know, absolutely loved the kids swimming lessons, had the best fun, and then I just grew then from getting all my qualifications in fitness and then moving out from the swim lessons into the fitness studio where I was taking classes, and then went on then to manage. And then, you know, you learn quite a lot in that amount of time. Like I just, from where I started to where I finished when I left the Mount Argyle to kind of when I left my last job to where I was when I started this, it was a process. Just took quite a while. But yes, I got to a point where, you know what, I'm good at what I do. I have a passion for it. There is a need out there for the likes of particularly kids yoga, especially after COVID. You know, you've seen like what had happened to children who, you know, were told, no, you can't do this, you can't do that, you have to stay here. And then suddenly that creativity, their imagination, all just was almost, it was taken away from them. Yeah. And I've seen it in my own kids.
And they're getting the benefits and not really realizing they mm-hmm. are sometimes, I would imagine, as well.
Yeah, 100%.
It's never a simpler journey, but you know, to go from paid steady employment where you mm-hmm. know what you're getting each week into a business thing, that would be the trigger I'd find difficult to pull. And I said this yesterday. Did it take you long to build to that, to get to the point whereby, you know, you say, well, if there's a risk here, I'm prepared to take that risk? Or maybe there was no risk.
100%. This is not for everybody. And I think you sort of need to have a bit of not an attitude, but you need to be a little bit ballsy and not to be afraid to take a risk. I'm all of that. I didn't realize I was, to be honest with you, but I guess I am. But I had a great support. I mean, my husband at home, like from day one, he was just like, what are you doing? You know, you should just go for it. Go do it. You're great at what you can do. There is definitely something there that needs to be tapped into, and you're the one to do it. And mm-hmm. just go do whatever you need to do. So yeah, I had a great support system, and I still do. And you know, if it wasn't for my husband, like I definitely wouldn't be here. And obviously for DLDC as well, they have just been fantastic. Like Colette's just been amazing through this whole process. Yeah.
I'll ask you a little bit more about that, but I want to bring Caroline into the conversation now. And this shows the diversity of sort of DLDC engaged supported companies, because your business is, you know, it's very specific, obviously, in designing and the materials that you use. Talk to us a little bit about that, Caroline.
So I run Ancient Roots Ireland. It's based just outside Letterkenny. And so I design and make handmade bags and purses made from Donegal tweed from McNutt's Woolen Mills. Just have them here as well.
But, it's lovely, actually. Yeah. Hold it up a bit higher for those on the camera. Yeah, lovely.
So,
But it's indistinguishable from, and of course it is, it's indistinguishable from something you would see on someone's shoulder in New York, London, Paris, wherever it might be, right?
Yeah. And so, the reason I kind of started was I wanted to blend three parts of my life that I really love, which was my craft, like my trade of sewing, the spiritual aspect of my life, and my love for Donegal. It's been a whole journey, you know.
And how long have you been in business now, Caroline?
I started just at the start of the summer.
Okay.
But I've been very lucky. I got into the markets in Galway. So I've been sewing during the week, and then I would take the all my products down to the markets at the weekends in Galway and sell them there. So I got great market research. So I learned what worked and what didn't work. And yeah, I have...
And how many pieces, if you design a piece, right, how many pieces are you likely to make of that? Or do you limit it? Or if there's demand, you'll just keep banging them out as much as you can?
Yeah, so I started with like lots of different things that I was making. And now I've kind of worked it out that it's just bags and purses at the moment. Mm-hmm. So eventually I'd like to go into making clothes maybe eventually. But at the moment, yeah, that's what I'm making.
And how important is the materials to you? In other words, the brand that is, you know, Donegal Tweed.
Yeah, I feel like I picked Donegal Tweed because, you know, it's a part of our heritage here in Donegal. Like the weavers, like the specific process that they do is unique to Donegal. And also, like, they make just gorgeous, like, the colours and, you know, the patterns and everything.
You can't sort of, I don't think, almost artificially recreate that. And this is why it's so important. And I know there's moves ongoing that Donegal Tweed is recognised as a brand, a protected brand, for people like yourself as well, so that people don't see Chinese-made bags that are Donegal Tweed. Because, you know, on the back of your success. In terms of scale, Caroline, do you want to get as big as you can? Or do you want to meet the demand that you set and be sort of comfortable and happy in that? Because, of course, this exclusivity as well, too, is quite an attractive part of a brand, potentially.
Yeah, no, I thought, like, I went through lots of different iterations of the business since I've started. And I thought at the start I wanted to make it big and have it everywhere. But the more that I get into it, the more I realize that actually, like, just making them myself and selling them and just being able to, like, have a good life with that is more important to me now.
Are you able to cede a little bit of control, though, and have someone else working on them? Or do you have to sing the song, write the song, record the song?
At some stage, yeah, that'll be the plan to hopefully get on a little bit of help with the sewing, yeah.
And Ancient Roots Ireland, is that your social media handle, your website as well?
That's it. And I'm just setting up a website as well. So brilliant. It'll be ancientrootsireland.ie.
So it's really exciting early time, but you're seeing enough to know you've got onto something here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which is great.
And as I say, in the markets, it's been amazing because there's people from all over the world that have come there to Galway, you know, so there's the locals and then, like, international people.
Well, that's it, you see. I mean, firstly, you're producing a lovely product, right, that looks great. But, I mean, you talk about sort of international markets, you know, Donegal Tweed, made in Donegal, handmade. It's incredibly attractive. I mean, that's going to be a talking point if you're in California or if you're in Sydney or Dubai.
Yeah, and, like, a big part of my business is reconnecting people with their ancient roots.
Yeah.
So having something that is from the land, you know, made here in Donegal, especially for people that are coming, maybe who have ancestors that lived in Ireland that, like, left and, you know, could never make it home, and now their descendants are coming back to reconnect with the land, you know, just so to have a tangible piece of the land that's come from here, made here, you know, is like helping them reconnect, you know, have a sense of belonging in a tangible form.
Yeah, okay, it's fantastic. And how has DLDC been supporting you in these early stages of your business?
Oh, I don't know if I could have got it off the road.
How did you hear about DLDC, for an example?
I heard about it online. And so I just went over to them and spoke to them, and I got working with Colette. And yeah, so I wouldn't have known much about tax or finance or, like, all the kind of business admin kind of side of things. And so she literally, like, sat me down and explained everything about cash flow forecasting and, you know, the money kind of side of things, and how to be like financially secure with the business, you know.
And I suppose too, you know, and both of you are very passionate about what you do as well too, but you have to put some business in there as well.
Absolutely,
don't you? Because
yeah,
it could be a fool's errand otherwise.
Yeah For me, like, you know, it could have just been a hobby, like, whereas now with their support, I was able to, like, she literally helped me fill out the forms for my tax and everything, you know, so they've been so supportive. Yeah,
brilliant stuff. And which takes a bit of space, gives a bit of space for you then to, and if you are the on the end of the phone, on the end of the email.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. She even rang me yesterday and she was like, so tomorrow is the radio interview. You know, she was like talking me through, supporting me. And yeah,
great just stuff. If people want to check out your stuff, Caroline, Ancient Roots Ireland, and learn more behind, because I think there's an awful lot behind this that I haven't really dug into in terms of, you know, connections and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If people want more information about your products, how do they get it?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Ancient Roots Ireland, and Facebook as well. And as I say, I'm setting up a website as well.
So. Yeah, so it's exciting, a really exciting time for your business as well. And Caroline, Claire, how long have you been running CL Wellness now?
Just you.
Right, okay.
I'm into my second week.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So this is a great opportunity to get the message out there.
Absolutely.
Because we are maybe, sorry, you're the expert here, correct me if I'm wrong. I think wellness used to be sort of like a word, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not.
No.
People understand it now. Yeah. And people could say, right, that my kid could benefit mm-hmm. from that. Or you could get an 85-year-old mm-hmm. woman who's saying, you 100%. Know, since I started this, my balance is better, my yeah. movement is better, I can get out of bed. You know what I mean?
That's
so
it, yeah.
You don't have to sell wellness and yoga and stuff anymore as such. It's just the fact that you're there to do it with them.
That's it, exactly. And I think... And I think that's the best thing, I suppose, about me is that I'm coming from an industry where I've spent so long and I've seen quite a lot and I've experienced quite a lot. But then I've got my yoga instructor and I've got my Pilates. So I've got the best of both worlds, where the yoga is more your mindfulness, your flexibility, and then your Pilates is more of your strength and recondition and like let's get strength back into the body.
How effective is, regardless of your age, even if you're an athlete, how effective is Pilates, say, in that really important core, you know, getting strength in that space?
You need it for life, for everything.
Yeah.
Even, so like I, when I left the Mount Argyle, I went to ABC School Supplies last year. So I went from being the most active person and, you know, nonstop to sitting at a desk. And I quickly realized that sitting at a desk was not for me. It just killed my back. And the only thing that really kept me going was what I knew in Pilates, to get the strength, keep building up, keep doing what I was doing, and to keep my hips, my lower back strong, because I was sitting at a desk.
And I must ask, Caroline, what is your sewing posture like?
Yeah, I was just thinking. My mother, head over to
my father was a tailor and my mother a seamstress and she was bent over like this here, so straight back.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And you know,
I'll be going to Claire.
Absolutely, there we go.
And if you need a clutch, do you do clutch bags?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. So there we go.
This is called networking. Yes.
I have lots of folders, lots of books, so I'm going to need a pretty big bag other than what I have. Yeah. So yeah, no, 100%. But no, that's what you're kind of looking at. And I'm actually in with Milford, Donegal County Council next week, actually doing a workshop based on this. It is literally just kind of like what I've learned from sitting and how it affected me to how I know it affects everybody else.
Okay.
And
so
I'm like that middle person to help you out.
You've got classes in Gallow Glass Community Centre in Milford, Termin yes. GA Club, mm-hmm. Pilates for Adults, the yep. Nifty 50s
My
movement.
Nifty 50s.
I look forward to being qualifying for that.
Brilliant class.
Movement sessions. Shut up, Caroline. Teen strength mm-hmm. And flexibility classes as well, right?
Yeah,
so that's fantastic, isn't it? Well mm-hmm. done. And is it socials primarily for you as well?
Yes. I am on Facebook with CL Wellness and Instagram CL Nutrition 2021, and like that website is coming as well for the new
Great,
year.
And we'll link them off ours. And you know, it's really interesting, and I think it's actually really significant for you to come out and be speaking about new businesses, really, as you're working on your website and, I think it's really exciting, and I'm so pleased for both of you, and I'm delighted to give the support of the DLDC, and that's why we're platforming it this week. And I was joking a little bit there about networking and networking events, but it is kind of funny, isn't it, that you, Caroline, you thinking, you know, actually, you know, maybe in the work that I do, and then mm-hmm. and then you saying, you know what, I could support a fellow businesswoman and meet the needs that I have. So that's networking live. All right, anything either you want to add or you have? We've touched on most, I think, haven't we?
I would just say that anybody that's thinking about starting a business and they're a bit unsure, or they have like a trade or something and they wouldn't know the other side of things, like definitely give the DLDC a ring, or just go up to them and speak to them.
Mm.
they're so like ready, and they have all these resources and networking and workshops and everything. So.
Yeah, but even the what might be seen as the distracting stuff, the tax man, the liabilities, you know, business management, you know, stuff and it gives you guys the space to really fulfill your passions.
They run like quite a lot of workshops. You know, if there is anything at all that you're sort of doubtful on, that you're not sure, like if they get enough people for that one workshop, say on bookkeeping, one on tax, whatever it might be, they will run it. So like all the help that you need is there.
Okay.
And I would say, you know, be confident. Just, you know, if you think that your idea, if you think that something has got legs, just go for it. And what's the harm? If it doesn't work out, you'll not die wondering, you know. So just go do it.
We're here for a good time, not a long time.
Well, you know.
Caroline Crumlish from Ancient Root Ireland. I wish you nothing but success. And I can't wait to check out your stuff, actually. Claire Lynch of CL Wellness, too. I think it's amazing what you're doing, because it's actually really helping people, but you're managing to sort of, you know, it's a business, but also a passion, and it's helping others, which is great. Both of you, thank you so very much indeed.
So much.
We'll have more from the DLDC tomorrow.